Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Growth Well podcast. We're so glad to have you back today. We've got a fantastic guest, an old friend of mine, Bruce Pulver. He is a speaker. He's an author. He's a podcaster, a leadership coach, a fellow word nerd, which we're going to get into. He's a dad of two, and he's even sometimes a golf caddy. So we might talk about all those things today. Bruce, thank you for joining me today.
Josh, it's great to be with you today. Thanks for inviting me in. I look forward to where this conversation goes and having a great talk.
So, Bruce, tell us a little bit about you for those of our listeners who don't know you and aren't familiar with your work yet.
Yeah, well, thank you. So, you know, we met, it's got to be like 10 or 15 years ago, right? We're both in the...
You're making me feel old, Bruce. Come on now.
Well, okay, 10 or 15 months ago. Whatever, 10 or 15, fill in the unit there. You know, both in the healthcare business information systems world. And that's where I kind of grew up out of, you know, college into work profession. But prior to that, maybe even back up a little bit to tell the story. On the day I was born, and we're not going to go all the way back, but it was a pretty pivotal day. My mother experienced a heart trauma, which was called a dissecting aortic aneurysm during labor. That's a mouthful. But what it basically means is that the blood leaving her heart in the arteries, the artery exploded, blew up, started bleeding internally during labor. And after 60 days, three experimental surgeries on techniques that had not been perfected, she was the first person to emerge living longer than 72 hours after that procedure. So I broke her heart on the first day of my life, but right. So the point I make about that is that I was raised by a family that had amazing gratitude every day, like for being alive, because no one had ever survived that. So I didn't really realize that, right? I grew up in life and things were kind of bouncing along and you just work, you do the things you're supposed to do, things work out for the best, you know, keep your nose to the grindstone, all the stuff that I remember hearing. Until it was a little bit after you and I met, I was rolled up in a layoff. It was actually the second layoff I was involved in.
Been there, bro.
Yeah, and
been
I'm there. Sure a lot of folks on this call have been through, you know, you're charging really hard, and the next thing you know, I call it a BAM moment. Something happens that wasn't there yesterday. For me, it was a job. And what I realized that at that moment in time was that the gratitude that my mother had for life, and my father, who was kind of the word guy, forged itself as I worked to try the best I possibly could to deal with a situation I didn't expect. And it came through the development of this concept of encouraging myself with a single word every day. So I began writing, and that just continued. Got back on the saddle, got back in the technology business, got back into the career. And this writing ended up becoming a book called Above the Chatter, Our Words Matter, Powerful Words That Changed My Life Forever. And I kind of paddled in two canoes for a while. I was doing the corporate work, continuing to step back into that, client relationships, sales, marketing kinds of things. But this traction and actually this kind of tug hit me pretty hard about this is making an impact. And pay attention to it, Bruce. And the way I found out that this impact was really being made was I sent a word one morning to a friend who's a pediatric heart surgeon. So he operates on babies' hearts that are the size of walnuts, seven-day-old babies. It's here.
Wow.
And he messaged me and he said, I needed that word today that you texted me. And I really was kind of on to the next thing. I wasn't really certain. So we had a conversation that night, Josh. He called me and he said, we were scrubbing. We had, you know, six or seven of us in the OR, pre-OR suite scrubbing up. And when we were going to go in and work on this baby's heart, there were 10 possible things that we would find when we went in there. Even though we had the imaging, we had all the technology, everything's different when you get in there, he said. And with those 10 things, there were multiple combinations of solutions that we were trying to map out as we were scrubbing. My phone went off. My assistant reached the phone out of my jacket pocket and said, what is it? It's a text from Bruce. He said, please read it. And what I wrote that day and texted to him was a word, and I write them vertically, and I just use the letters to define the meaning of the word. Josh, and that word was calm. Catch a little moment. So catch a little moment. He said, we step back, maybe figuratively, step back out of that processing and exhaled. And that helped us get ready to go into that OR. And it didn't determine the outcome, right? It didn't help them do things that they already trained to do. But when he sent that back to me and said, that word helped us today, I realized that there was something with this writing and the power of our words to impact our mindset, our thoughts, our outcomes, our actions, everything.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And it's so interesting how you've connected that purpose and you found it almost accidentally. I think a lot of us find what we're meant for, if you will, along the way, right? We're doing the corporate thing. We're doing, you know, the work that we either fell into or, you know, we're led by a higher power. You know, we're chasing a paycheck and providing for our family and doing all the things. And we find the thing that we're like, wow, that's something. And sometimes we make a living out of it. Sometimes we don't. I don't think that that should necessarily be a lens by which you judge your why, right? This podcast has brought me so much joy sharing stories like yours. And it's not a job. It's just something I love to do. And hopefully it's helpful to people. So I think that's amazing. Now, normally I ask your why or your purpose, but I mean, you pretty much just said it, but do you have anything, you know, to add to that? Is there, you know, a mantra or a thing, you know, that you hang on to every day when life gets a little harder?
Well, number one, it's my faith. Number one, understanding, bottom line, that's it. For me, the miracle of my mother's experience really deeply seated in me that there are things that, we're intended to be, we're here for a reason, those kinds of things. But, you know, for me, it's really, I played a lot of tennis growing up and I always wanted to play at a higher level, not to get to the classification, but to test my game. And so I would often play against, you know, I'm thinking about the return of serve and here comes this, you know, speed ball faster than I'm used to taking it. And all of a sudden I've got to kind of mentally own that space. So I'd say things like, this is my house or my ball or catch it early or you've got this or, you know, just, you know, return, you know, get back in play. I would say these things to myself. I never wrote them down. But that's sort of my go-to is the power of how we speak to ourselves. Now, it's not easy because we are sometimes wired to use, you know, an apostrophe T, can't, won't, or I'm not this, I'm not that. And I'm not exactly sure where that comes from, but I've found that my level of, like you said, kind of re-leveling is to avoid words that end in not or can't, you know, NT or
no. I love that.
Possible.
Yeah. I love that. We have so much negative self-talk in our society these days. And I just think that it's really detrimental. I know it is for me. And I try to use words positively with myself and my family all the time. So I think that's really interesting. And, you know, do you have rituals and habits and routines that kind of get you in that, that kind of space every day to keep you in that sort of lane?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's really important no matter what yours is. I'm a big believer in consistency and incrementalism. So yes, every morning I wake up and for me, the first thing I do is I go into the Bible and I have a group of guys that hold me accountable. And we do these daily affirmations through verses and chapters that we're doing together. And, you know, we're into like 1600 days in a row of doing that.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's,
I don't think I've ever done anything 1600 days in a row, save for like, wake up. You know, I can't think of a single thing that I've done every day other than wake up for 1600 days in a row. That's amazing.
Well, it's I've had to lean on it and I'm blessed that I'm able to, that I have this belief that, you know, that there's a gravel path. And as long as I'm on that path and I'm following where I believe God intends me to be, then I'm not saying everything works out perfectly, but I feel like I have purpose. So that's number one.
Yeah.
And number two, I also write every day and I write these acrostics similar to the one that I shared with you of Calm every morning to give myself a piece of encouragement. It's sort of like being back on that tennis court, right? You know, you've got this, or, you know, or grit, or, you know, today be, you know, respectful, or whatever the word is. And I just write it and use the letters to define what it means for me today and share it out. So that's one thing. And as it relates, it doesn't kind of whatever it is, I don't think it really matters, but I do think there's a commitment that's required to it.
Yes.
You know, we've talked about this, I think, one of the last times we were together, that there's studies about 21 days to form a habit, right?
And
I truly believe a habit is what you do. You know, I get up in the morning, I make coffee, I go to the gym, I leave the gym. You know, it's sort of the ritual of habits.
Absolutely.
There's another bit of research, though, that says if you do something for 66 days, when you reach the 67th day, it's harder on day 67 to not do the thing than it is on day 66. And it's proven it to me. It's several times over. So therefore, that goes from habit, what I do, to lifestyle. And that's who I am.
Yeah. And yeah. I just finished a book by James Clear called Atomic Habits, right? Yeah, I'm sure you've read it. But, you know, it talks a lot about like thinking in terms of not what I want to be or what I want to do or what I want to achieve, but who I am, and building an identity around those things that are really important to you. And it sounds like that's exactly the type of thing you're practicing.
And it is a incremental daily commitment. I'll share this one with you because this really helps me when I think about that, because if we're wanting to get into a practice of something that helps us get 1% better every day, we have to do something and we have to, what I call, commit. And so when I wrote commit vertically, there's two ways I looked at it. One is, what is it to commit? I wrote it count on me making it there. One way to spell commit, right? And so I talk about this a lot in my keynotes, in my what I call word shops or workshops. And that is, Josh, you and I could commit to something like, I don't know, let's say we're going to eat well, we're going to eat better, we're going to cut something out of our diet, whatever that is. And then we say, yes, we're going to eat more healthy. We're standing next to each other.
Lord knows I've tried that a bunch of times.
Right. And then we high five ourselves and we say, let's go get a cheeseburger.
Yeah, absolutely. The for me, it's the tacos. They get me every time.
Nothing against tacos, nothing against cheeseburgers.
No.
But if we're making that commitment, count on me making it there is kind of saying it. So how do we turn the commit into a how? How do we activate that? Because that's really what I talk about when I'm doing speaking, is how do we activate something new or activate retaining a consistent pattern? So I'll go through the commit a different way, which is the C is you have to come with possibility expectations. This is possible.
Okay.
I can do this, right? That's right. Then is we have to own our time. We have to make sure we are allocating.
Ooh, that's a hard one.
Right? All the distractions. But it's super important to make that 5 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever that is to do that affirmation or to write that thing down or to plan that day out. Own our time. The M is I believe if we make service part of the effort, we're then bringing others along with us. Simple example. Let's say we're going to walk and we ultimately want to do a 5K in 45 days. Well, what if we start walking with an empty trash bag in our pocket and we find a wrapper, a bottle, a can, we pick it up. We're doing something that's outside of just ourselves. So that's the first M. You know, I'm kind of geeky here, right? I'm the word guy. So
I love it. I love it. Come on.
The second M is make and keep promises to yourself. So you mentioned earlier, I've got two grown daughters, right? I would never miss picking up my oldest daughter from her volleyball practice at 6 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock, whenever it was over. I'd be in that park about 5 or 10 minutes beforehand. I may even go to the practice to watch it, et cetera, right? But how often do we discount the promises that we make to ourselves of something we want to do? Because we are often wired to serve others. And sometimes that causes us to say, I'll get to that later.
Right? Yeah.
Okay. And then the I is in line with our actions to our goals. We have to be doing the things that take us in that step, even if it's incremental, even if it's one at a time, even if it's you want to do 100 push-ups in a month, you start by doing 3, then you do 4.
That's right.
Then you do maybe 8. So we have to, our goals have to be in line. Our actions need to be in line with our goals. And then the T, I believe this happens. Then with our realize, we'll realize the outcome. So the what commitment is counting me making it there. And then the how are those just a different way to look at the word commit.
Yeah. I think that's just amazing. And, you know, so something I'm sure a lot of our listeners are thinking about is, have you always been this way? Even before that moment with the physician that you talked about, have you always been disciplined and writing and playing with words like you're doing?
No, I really haven't. I mean, you know, my dad loved crossword puzzles and he wrote plays. And so I was kind of around kind of someone who was rather literary. But I'll tell you, I think it emerged out of some levels of encouragement that I got when I was younger, that how we speak to ourselves and others is incredibly important.
It matters.
I'll share another example with you, if I may.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I grew up playing Little League Baseball, right? And at 12 years old, I mean, I played from the time I was 5 until the time I was probably 15. And then music took over, and that's one other conversation. So at 12 years old, you're on the smaller baseball field. You're still in that Little League park, right? And, you know, I was okay. You know, I was all-star. I played third base. I pitched, batted third or fourth in the lineup. You know, I lived for this game. I loved it so much. And then at 13, you move to the bigger fields. That's really the
I remember that move.
Remember that? So,
I was not as good as you were, and that big field scared
me. Well, you know, I get up there, and I had the blessing of a coach, who was about 22 or 23 years old at the time. He's gone on to be a professional scout and is in the Scouting Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
I went to third base. We started taking ground balls the first week and practicing. And he came up to me and he said, Bruce, I need you at second because, you know, your hands are good. We're going to need to try to force that runner at second on a ground ball. You can get there. You've got good hands. And maybe we could turn the double play. I said, okay, man, I'm over there.
All right.
Then he said, you know, I need you to bat first, you know, not third or fourth, because we want to get you on base. Your hands are pretty, you can bunt. We can get you to do things. You can beat out a ball in the infield, et cetera. I need you to bat first or second. I said, okay. And he said, you know, you're probably not going to be a starting pitcher, but what I really need is I need you to come in later in the innings of the game, because the guys that I have that are throwing the heat, we need someone to come in who can throw the ball at a different speed than they are. And that's going to help us because their timing is going to be. I had the best year of my life at that field. And I had a chance to have a conversation with Tim. His name's Tim Wilkin, about 6 months ago. And I said, Tim, I need to explain something that has impacted me since I played for you. He said, what's that? I said, you didn't tell me at third base that my arm isn't strong enough to throw the ball across the field, so I'm going to move you over to piddly second. Right? He didn't say, Bruce, you don't have the power to hit the ball in the gap to get a double. He said, I need you on first base to bring the guys up behind you so we can get you around and score runs. And he didn't say you're not a pitcher in this league. He said, I'm going to use you at a time where you're going to fit into the game.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to say to him how much of an impact later in life, I maybe didn't realize it at the time, how he encouraged me in that space where he could have really just cut me off at the knees.
He really could have. And, you know, not only did he encourage you, but he found your strengths and he found where you fit and put that to good use. And I think so oftentimes, you know, we maybe aren't operating in our strengths. And when somebody can come along or we have something that resets us, that really puts us in that area of strength, a whole new world opens up and it's really cool. I've had bits and pieces of that happen over my career, you know, and it's just been amazing. So I'm curious, speaking of people in your life, you know, things don't always go our way. We're not always positive, although you may be one of the most optimistic people I know. And I thought I was, but, you know, it takes one to know one, but do you have things or people in your life? You mentioned your Bible study and your accountability group earlier that can recognize almost before you do if, you know, you're dipping, or, you know, they can say, "Hey, Bruce, something's not right here. What's up?
Yeah.
Are you okay?"
Yeah, I'm blessed that, well, several, but probably the first comes to mind is my wife. I mean, she has a term for me when and listen, let me just back up for a second. This isn't like automatic. This isn't a light switch. I am absolutely, absolutely a mouse in my own laboratory. I mean, I have to do this for myself, or I'm almost fearful of the slip, right? Of losing it. And so I don't ever want to come across as, you know, super positive. I want to come across as super possibility. Like,
okay.
Does that make sense? Like, yeah, here's what I can do. Maybe that's not a reality right now, but what is? Where can I get in where I fit in? And it's my wife. She has a nickname for me. She calls me Mr. Grumpy Pants. If it starts slipping, and you know, we've needed to really rely on that through, you know, a lot of things that life has given us to work through. And, you know, I just think first of all, gratitude is so important part of my life. The other is if we can turn things like I have to into I get to.
I knew where you were going with that one. We say the same thing with our children.
Yeah. It's one of the first things that I remember saying to the girls was my youngest daughter, who's never had an off button. She would try anything, went on to play soccer and just do an awful lot with that sport. But I remember her at like 3 years old, we went up to the neighborhood park where, you know, there's the monkey bars or the horizontal ladder, you know, where you reach this way and keep going forward, right?
Yep.
And I got her up kind of on those two steps before the ladder started, and she put one hand up and she looked at me, and I could tell there was a little bit of uncertainty. And I said, "Emily, all I want you to do is say, 'Yes, I can.'" And she said, "Yes, I can. What does that mean, Daddy?" And I had written it: "You expect success in challenging activities now." I said, if we could just start everything we do with, "I expect some level of success.
Yeah.
I may not win, but if I learn, that's success."
Yeah.
It's sort of a mantra that comes into play. And, you know, like I said, you know, you can't be happy when you have a flat tire on the way to work. I mean, you can't think, "Oh, that's I'm so grateful that happened." You know, I'm not talking about that. But I do think that if we see things with a possibility, you'd ask me about kind of purpose. It's really helping others. I think there's a sometimes hidden potential that we don't see in ourselves.
Yeah.
That's really what my purpose is.
It takes others to bring that out of us. And that seems to be your purpose, to bring it out in others. I have a similar purpose, to be a light for others. And that is just to help people find their way in whatever I can, whether it's, you know, opening a door and smiling at a stranger, or, you know, going deep into some sort of mentor or coaching relationship.
Absolutely.
So when life throws you curveballs, sticking to our baseball analogy, and I'm a huge baseball fan, I was a terrible player. Oh my goodness, I was awful. I think I batted like 0.0001 or something like that. I mean, I was terrible, terrible, terrible. They stuck me out in right field where nobody could hit into right field. And, you know, let me play. And I was probably, you know, with my ADHD, looking at planes and picking daisies and who knows what else. But I loved the game. I still love the game. I love Braves baseball here. I listen to or watch most every game, or at least a portion of it. But curveballs.
Yeah.
Life is going to bring them, just like the pitchers are going to bring them. What do you do to both ready yourself for that curveball, because you know it's coming at some point, you don't know when, but that curveball is coming? And then what do you do when it comes and, you know, knocks you off balance a little bit?
And they do. And I think we have emotions and feelings and things in our body for a reason. And so I wouldn't say ignore them, right? If something happens,
right,
you get angry.
Yeah.
Let be angry, right? If something happens and you're sad, I mean, you got to let that stuff play through. Otherwise, I think my visual of this is taking that beach ball that's fully inflated and you're pushing it down in the water, in the pool, it wants to get out. And I think
it's coming back up.
I think
up.
We have to let those things go through their process. First of all, I think we have to be aware that something could happen, right? Like, it's not always going to be, because if we expect perfection, I think we're setting ourselves up for disaster.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my guest last week was talking about lowering expectations. Don't lower your standards. Don't lower your work ethic, but lower your expectations. I often say hold them loosely, right? You do your best. And for me as a believer, let God take care of the rest. Just do your best. And, but it's hard. It's hard when you get that curveball and you swing and miss, and it just leaves you standing there at the plate looking like an idiot. But it happens to all of us, right?
So you're talking about preparing for it. I think some of the foundational values, right? What matters, what's important, understanding that life gives us opportunities. You know, there's a great book called The Blessing of a Skinned Knee. It's about it's about raising children, and it's okay to see to have a skinned knee. It's okay to because we, you know, I think we learn more when we have those setbacks than if it goes exactly as planned, right? So that would be number one. Would be kind of be okay with not being okay in certain scenarios. And that's hard for us, right? Because we are wired, we're driven.
Yes.
We're going to get this outcome. We're going to make that number. We're going to close this deal. We're going to win that closing argument. Pick the profession that you're
absolutely
in.
Absolutely.
And then what can we do, I think, is the next question. Okay, here's where we are. Where can we go? Sometimes we want to bust through a wall. But if we step back and look at it, maybe going around it's the best way. Or maybe we turn around and go the other way. Maybe we go over it. And surrounding ourselves with people that embrace the fact that this is one of my favorite phrases, the letter U, the letter R, the letter E, and UF. You are enough, period.
Yeah.
As is, out of the box, you are enough. Now, some assembly required, right? We've got to work on ourselves. But I think if we start there, knowing that we are adequate, knowing that we have all that we need, and be grateful for it, I think that really helps when those bam moments, which my whole book became part of that, right?
Absolutely.
Didn't expect it, right? You got to be kidding me, right? There were 1,000 possible names on the grease board. You erased 500 of them. Those are the ones that were staying, and my deed didn't get erased. Oh my, angry, doubt, maybe it was me. Maybe everything that I'd done up to that point was luck, or, you know, and then, okay, where do we go from here? And for me, it was the writing that started. So that's a winded answer, long-winded answer, but I think we have to be prepared for things, not expecting them to go wrong. Like, if you ever played golf with a caddy, we'll talk a little about that maybe. Man, I played with one once, first time ever. It was an honor. I said, anything that you will share with me, John, the caddy, I'll do. Just help me, guide me. So the first tee, he says to me, don't go left. Like, don't hit the ball to the left. I stepped back and I said, I still want all of your advice, but can I ask you to wordsmith it a little bit and say, hit it up the right side? Doesn't mean I'm going to do that, but it puts my mind in the frame of where I need to go.
Yeah. Instead of the don't, it's the do. That's really, really important and great advice for, you know, all of our listeners. So, Bruce, I could talk to you forever. I really appreciate you being on the show today. I'm curious, what's next for you on the horizon of your own growth journey? Things you're excited about this summer. I think you said you were caddying in a tournament tomorrow, which sounds amazing. Like, what are you excited about?
I'm excited about opportunities when organizations are wanting to pour into their people in a way that kind of helps a mindset reset, merge, leadership teams, schools, just the opportunity that folks, you know, because we're incrementally switching things. And if I could change one word in a situation, what does growth mean to you and your organization as the CFO? And what does growth mean as chief operating officer? Let's sit and write that down, see what it means. We come to a mind merge of, oh, you thought about that differently. So this summer, I'm headed down to a resort in the south part of Georgia, caddying for an amazing human being that's an adaptive golfer, meaning he plays golf. His disability is he was born with one arm. So he's a one-armed golfer. So we're going to spend time down there together. My job is to be a Sherpa. My job is to use some of the skills that I so love to do to help my player, my employee, my teammate, my child, whoever that is, get them to where they can be in a position to perform as good as they can. So that's what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of speaking. Summer slows down a little bit, but just, keynotes and workshops that help folks kind of unpack in a leadership meeting, I thought you said this, but I meant that. And, one word could mean two things. I'll give you a simple example.
Yeah.
The word bound could mean restricted or it could mean bound and determined. And we get to choose.
That's right.
So I'm excited about those opportunities to pour into others and do more writing and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you've certainly poured into me today. I know you've poured into our listeners. So thank you so much for being on the Growth Well Show. That's what we're all about here.
Oh, it's great to be here, Josh. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. And like you said, we could go for hours.
We really could. We'll have to have you on again. This podcast is not going anywhere. Thank you, everyone, for listening. That's a wrap. Thank you, as always, to my my friends and team at MarketScale who make this podcast happen. Please subscribe, download, tell a friend, do all the things, and we will be back next time with the Growth Well podcast. Until then, go out there and pursue growth well.